by the name of the kid, Famous Swag. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Welcome to the best of Tim and Sid. It's Monday, December 30th. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. My name is Sid Sixero. Tim McAuliffe is to my right.
Hi, everybody.
2 days left in the calendar year, which means we only have 2 shows left in the decade of the tens.
That was a good weekend, wasn't it?
What a week. Man, I did so many things. Did you eat?
Can you tell this is tape?
No, this is live. I ate so many things over the weekend, I can't even keep track.
I filled my belly.
Time flies when you're having fun in the future.
Remember, you can hit us up anytime on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Despite the fact that these are the best of shows, we are still providing great content in all of those places, and you can stream the show wherever you get your great podcasts. Coming up on this show, we will discuss Bianca Andreescu
and Coco.
Real talk with Nate Burleson.
My weight. A former Jays player.
A former Jays general manager.
A current Jays president. But we begin today's show. I don't want to gloss over our weight thing. Our weight did come up this year at one point.
It did.
And it was one of the most talked about segments we did the entire year. Is that fair to say? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Is that a compliment or an insult?
I think it's a compliment because it was during a weird time of year. And I know a lot of people did come up to us about the weight segment, so we'll get to that.
We'll put our back into it.
Yes, we will. We begin today's show, however, with Canada's Athlete of the Year, winner of the Lou Marsh, Bianca Andreescu. What a 2019 for Bianca. Quite a year for tennis in this country as well. Mm-hmm. And nobody had more success with it than the 19-year-old from Mississauga. She became the first Canadian woman to win the Rogers Cup in 50 years. And just a month later, made even bigger headlines, becoming the first ever Canadian to win a Grand Slam singles title when she beat the greatest women's player of all time, Serena Williams, in her backyard, basically, at the U.S. Open.
She finished 148 spots above where she finished in 2018. Fourth in the world. One of our favorite Bianca moments, though, was when she joined us in studio just 4 days after beating Serena. And while she didn't bring her championship trophy with her, we had a surprise fill-in for her.
She's a three-time winner this year. Mm-hmm. First Canadian to win a Grand Slam in tennis singles championship. Does not turn 20 years of age until next summer. And she's one of ours.
Yes.
Bianca Andreescu. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
Congratulations.
So happy to be here.
What was that? I saw you kind of... Is that the first time you saw yourself doing what you just did there?
It was. Yeah, I actually started tearing up. It's been an incredible journey. Not only U.S. Open, but this whole year has been a dream come true. It's another story when you dream about it when you're a little kid, but then it's another one when it actually happened. So I'm just on cloud nine right now.
You dream of saying those words, and then you just saw yourself saying
exactly.
Those words. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when does the sink-in moment happen? Because has it happened? Doesn't feel like it's happened.
No, I don't know when it's going to happen. After Indian Wells, it took me a couple of weeks. After Toronto, it took me a couple of days. Hopefully, sometime soon, this can definitely sink in so I can move on to the next one.
I love that you've already said that a couple of times about moving on to the next one. That's awesome. A lot of people are asking a lot of things of you right now. A couple of jackasses like us asking you to come in the studio and talk to us. A
couple
and you...
cool jackasses.
Appreciate it.
You didn't have to say yes.
But what's the coolest thing that you've gotten out of the last couple of days? Like, where's the point where you went, this is awesome?
Well, being on this show, first of all, I've watched you guys many times, so I'm really happy to be here. Being on Jimmy Fallon, too.
Which one was better, Fallon or...
You could say Fallon. It's outrageous.
No. It's pretty equal.
For sure it is.
Your mugs are cooler.
You should see our history of hip-hop. It's pretty similar.
It's not as cool.
Oh,
it's
God, that's cool. Me on camera.
That's you. That's you on The Tonight Show. Do you remember that? That was awesome.
I remember that.
Where's the trophy, by the way?
That's a good question. Someone asked me that in the press conference.
You own it?
I think it's at home, I guess. There's just too much going on in my head right now, so I haven't really paid attention to it.
So we can confirm Drake has contacted you.
Yes.
So no one asked you that at the press conference? I'm stunned.
No, so I made sure to say it because I know a lot of people were asking, so I just wanted to get it out the way. But yeah, he was really nice. He just said, congrats, we're all proud of you. So that was really nice of him. I'm a huge fan.
He's right, we're all proud of you. And I was touched specifically by the cartoon that ended up going viral online of the young girl watching you on TV. And I know we have the cartoon. We also have a picture of my family, because I have a 7-year-old daughter at home. And when I saw this cartoon, I immediately thought of the picture that I snapped at home. And my 9-year-old son and my 7-year-old daughter, she was doing the exact same thing as the... What's it feel like to know that there were people, like, in my family, I can show you the video of them watching, kind of freaking out. And this, my daughter wasn't into tennis before, but she was watching you and she was so excited.
It's so surreal. My goals have been to be able to inspire many people, and I think I'm starting to do that, which means a lot to me. I've been getting messages saying that they've picked up a tennis racket because of me, and some people haven't even watched tennis before the before the finals, actually, and now they're a huge fan, so that means so much, because I remember I was a kid. I've looked up to so many people, especially Canadian athletes growing up. They paved the way for me, so hopefully I can pave the way for many.
Yeah. There's so many things about what just happened, not just over the 2 weeks, but Saturday specifically.
Yeah.
So forgive me if I jump around here, Timmy, but prior to you walking out and talking to ESPN one final time and then the match beginning, you got the Beats by Dre on. A 23-time Grand Slam winner comes out behind you. I just want to live this one more time. Again, this is a U.S. Open final. You are prepping. Out comes Serena. One look, and the vibing just starts. Here we go. What was the song in the headphones in that moment?
It was Hot Girl Summer by Megan Stallion.
Nice.
That was my go-to this tournament.
Are you suspicious about stuff like that?
Yeah,
like
what
you
honestly,
be?
No. Honestly, no. I have a playlist on Spotify. You guys can hit me up on Spotify. I have some good tunes on there. But no, I'm not superstitious. I just listen to things that pump me up, because I think when I'm pumped up, I can do good things on the court.
Sid and I were talking about it on Monday, and I thought, you don't have to say this, but I thought you intimidated one of the most intimidating women's players of all time, if not the most intimidating player of all time. Did you go in with the mindset that the way that you could play, and I mean, we saw it come to fruition, that you could put the pressure on Serena Williams and in the end do what you did to her?
The goal right from the start, I spoke to my coach Sylvain about it, was to not feel intimidated by her and try to intimidate her by making her work for every point, and to just be in her face sometimes, not in her face directly, obviously, but for me mostly, so I can stay pumped up. And I think that's really what helped me win today. Today?
It's feels like the same day. I understand.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just like so focused on the video, but I still can't believe that happened. But
guys, stop running the great ball. Stop distracting her with your U.S. Open win behind the
couch. So we
get tired of watching that.
Nor should you. All right. So second set, 5-1. Then it's not 5-1. And I believe it was after it was 5-5. They showed a shot of you, towel in your head, during the changeover. You're thinking what?
Well, I was thinking about a lot of things. It was expected for her to come back. She's come back in many matches when she was down. So I tried to prepare myself best for that to happen. But at that point, I just told myself to stay as focused as I can on the tactics, because I felt like I was missing a little bit too much during those games that I lost. But she also raised her level as well, and I think the crowd really helped her. The crowd was super loud. But that's what makes New York and U.S. Open so special. I mean, it's easy to just not think about the crowd, but I tried my best to just block it out, so I'm really glad with how I managed everything.
That's what everyone was most impressed with. Where do you get that from? I saw a tweet, and you called your mom a straight G. And every time we saw your mom, the straight G, there was, like, I was nervous watching you for points. And mom.
No, my mom
just
is.
And I know Sylvain is the same, but do you get it
no,
from mom?
No, she is. I think I get it from her.
Yeah?
She stays so calm and collected in the toughest moments, so definitely. I guess I have some good genes that run in the family.
Who do you think now is more famous, you or your parents?
That's a good question. My mom has
Coco
her own BuzzFeed post. Like, how crazy is that?
She has her own BuzzFeed post?
Yeah. Of all the tweets she's been getting of the moment after I won the first set, she was like, just so calm and collected.
How do your parents...
I mean, don't know.
I'm sure this is a question for mom and dad, but mom and dad are not in the hot seat here, so I'm going to leave them alone. You can answer for them because they've been so great. How do your folks stay so calm when their daughter's taking on Serena?
Yeah, I'd be flipping.
In that lion's den of an environment you were in, where 85% of the people or higher did not want to see you win that match.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no. If I was a parent, I'd be like jumping up and down. I don't know what I'd be doing, but I'm just so grateful with how they are. They've been supporting me and believing in me since day one, and I just can't thank you guys enough.
You can't get here without that support
no,
system.
No, they're the behind the scenes. Pardon?
Do you draw strength from it when you're like on the court, like just looking up?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. The look they have in their eyes really gets me pumped up and back into the match.
Do you ever accidentally cuss at them? you're a come on sometimes.
We've had some moments. I think we all do.
Timmy, go on.
I was going to ask if this year has changed your expectations, because it's a whole year, and obviously you had a few injuries along the way, but has it changed your expectations of yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I've been dreaming of this moment ever since I was a kid. And for it to actually happen is a whole other thing. I really thought I could do big things in this sport back then, but now I really think that I can. And
like
I just keep I just want to keep striving to do better.
What's the goal? Let's lay it out here.
Let's put it on the record right now.
You guys.
So you're going to China for
first.
A couple of tournaments to end the year, mm-hmm. potentially. By the end of your career, you want to win how many Grand Slams?
As many as I can. I don't have a number. I mean, if I can surpass Serena and Chrissy Evert and Margaret Court, it would be pretty cool.
It is high,
my
yes.
My dad screaming 20 bucks.
Yeah.
Become number one in the world. Keep on creating history and just continue to be an inspiration for many.
Can I add one more thing to that? Health.
Oh, my gosh. And just becoming better as a player and as a person. 100%. Because I think if I'm healthy, that's all that matters, really.
Right. Is there a way to work? We've had Milos in studio a bunch of times. He was basically our NBA analyst for a while because he loved basketball so much. But he would talk about how, like, the balance between working and then working too hard almost and the balance on the body. Do all of those things have to be right for you to do what you just did again?
Yeah, you have to find a good balance. I had a lot of experience of working too hard and not working hard enough. But now I found a good balance that's right in the middle. It's different for everyone, but I've found that balance. And I just want to keep doing what I'm doing because it's been working.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
So, what have you learned about yourself over the last 12 months?
A couple of things, actually. I've learned how to take care of my body in the best way that I can. Not only my body, but my mind as well. I've learned that I'm able to play against these top players and not feel intimidated. I've learned how to play in front of big stages and in front of many people, which I think has contributed to a lot of my recent success. I think experience is a big thing. And that's pretty much it. I mean, it's a lot, but I'm glad I got to experience that at this age.
It's a lot. It's a lot for a 35-year-old to deal with what you this sudden stardom. I mean, at 19, I don't really have a question. I just think it's messed up how you're handling it. I think it's really impressive.
Thank you.
You're doing awesome.
Are you just really kind of natural dealing with the media? I mean, you sense it every time a match ends and you talk to somebody on the court. You can sense it. Have you always been like that with the media?
I don't know. Let's ask everyone. Have I?
Yeah.
I guess
thumbs
so.
Up.
Yes.
Always been that way?
So.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm living up to it still.
So is Beijing next? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And you've decided that's where you get back on. Are you going to take a little time for you?
Yeah, for sure. I want to work on myself physically now because I've been playing quite a bit of tennis the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to be going to Beijing in the hopes of qualifying for the WTA Tour Finals at the end of the year.
There's an Olympic Games in Tokyo next year.
That's definitely on the list.
I think you might
That's
be good enough to do well there.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm no tennis expert.
I really hope I can.
I think you're right there.
On Monday, we had a little argument about what should be done for you here in Canada. And it sounds like Mississauga, the place you were born, really wants
crazy.
To. Sixero is also a Mississauga guy, so he's been shouting it out the entire
Saga
time.
City.
I've been keeping cool about it for the entire interview. I'm very proud of you for that.
Thank you.
Mayor John Tory of Toronto has weighed in. He wants to do something for you. But you know, he didn't want a Bigfoot, and we thought we would take matters into our own hands.
Oh, gosh.
So last week we offered a gift basket to P.K. Subban because he's getting engaged to Lindsey Vonn. We have got a gift basket for you from the Tim and Citizens who watch this show. So if you'd like to go through some of the things, we would be honored because not all of them are for you, but there are a few things for you in there.
Of course.
So now I don't know if you can use any more of those or if you're just using one.
Oh, my God. Yes, I can.
Okay.
You can't have enough of those.
Puts one of them around the arm every time.
Well, that's for Coco.
Yeah. Right
here. Yeah, no, we have stuff for Coco.
Tennis balls for Coco,
tennis balls.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Should I open this?
This is very special.
This is that is from Square One in Mississauga.
Is this a gift card?
It's a $20 gift certificate.
A $20 gift card to
Square One. I grew up there. I grew up in that
So
mall.
That, along with the $3.85 million from Saturday, it's been a good weekend.
So Bianca gotta Andrescu, keep adding on to it.
Very good.
You're getting the key to Mississauga. This is
key to the Tim and Sid studio.
That's a Rogers security pass for the building.
Anytime you want to use the studio.
Come whenever. Yes, absolutely.
You have a pass inside.
That's so cool.
There it is.
After 2 weeks, if you don't use it, they'll cut it off. I've been there. Happens, but
and there's a couple t-shirts in there. Okay. One of them's for Coco, one of them's for you, and then one. So this is for Coco
with my face on it. I think she sees me enough.
Yeah, that is okay. For Coco.
So that's for Coco. So she's sitting in the stands.
Oh, thank you for choosing a decent picture.
And then there's one for you on top, and that has Coco. Yeah. It has Coco's picture on it.
And that's how you guys are the best.
This dog's
really
been in the room the whole time, and it's been a dream, by the way. It has not made a single piece.
Straight G for Mama.
Yeah. There you go.
And we figured we'd make a shirt.
Oh, my goodness.
Mama.
You guys are honestly the best.
Now, sorry, Timmy, go on.
No, I was just going to say, we heard you say earlier that you didn't have the trophy with you. You weren't sure where it was. So we have a placeholder for you. And I hope that you will humbly accept the placeholder for now.
Okay.
Because we know.
Am I returning it?
We know that you are.
We just
a little
felt like
bit,
a trophy was needed,
yeah.
And we didn't see you had the trophy.
And we know that you're a little
so
bit.
It's going to go off.
Of a fan, so we decided to get a placeholder trophy for you. We hope that you can appreciate it. Sixero had to put on the white gloves.
There you go. So in lieu of the U.S. Open trophy, we got the Larry O.B.
No way, guys.
Yes, way.
It's going to stand here next to you like I'm security.
Wait, can I hold it?
Of course, yes.
Can we? Yeah.
See, I got like a whole exam on how to hold it. And Bianca can just grab it. No problem.
Okay.
There you go.
I
so
don't
it's
know
very
what's cooler, winning U.S. Open or holding this trophy.
There you go.
This is so cool.
So
I love that Sixero had to put gloves on, and they're like, yeah, you can hold it.
So I think this caps off a summer of Canadian champions pretty well. I would say. Yeah. What are you
I would
saying?
Say, oh, my gosh.
All right, I'm going to put it down here so I can properly.
You good with that?
I'm good with that.
There you go. I'm going to leave this right here. I'm going to take off these weird gloves because this wasn't my idea.
So this is is it an okay placeholder?
This is definitely my highlight of the day or the week.
A couple things. Thank you so much for coming.
Yes.
You are wiped out, and I know you're tired, and thank you very much for coming in. The family, thank you for coming
in. Thank you,
And on behalf of the country,
yes,
way to go.
Way to go. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for everyone at home for all your support. It really means the world to me.
I think the Americans want a few of these things back, so we'll try and keep it for a while, okay?
We can keep it for a while.
No, this is just the beginning. Canada's killing it.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up on the Best of Tim and Sid, the most pressing question of 2019, who weighs more, Sid or Tim?
I can't believe
you did it with me. You're just a good person.
Plus, we're talking to... I'm just moving on, okay?
Yeah,
we're talking to past and present Blue Jays Aaron Sanchez. Joined us just after getting traded to the Astros. Alex Anthopoulos will stop. Alex Anthopoulos. Like, I grew up in this city. I go to the Danforth all the time, and I stumble on Anthopoulos. What the hell's the matter with
it's
me?
It's not the easiest word.
Tikanis McAuliffe. Kala, I say. Alex Anthopoulos.
Aristeas.
Scored a big goal.
Yeah, I remember 2004. Yeah.
Okay, good. To talk about his playoff round. Braves plus Mark Shapiro takes your questions. But up next, it is one of our favorite segments of 2019, Real Talk with Nate Burleson. This is Best of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And thoughts. Come on, McAuliffe.
Welcome back to the Best of Tim and Sid. Coming up on today's show, we'll chat with former Jay Aaron Sanchez, who spoke to Tim McAuliffe like minutes or hours, I should say, after being dealt to the Houston Astros.
You weren't here?
I was not here for that.
Oh.
And
must have been a really good show.
The interview was, in all seriousness, was one of the better interviews of the year. And you got him just before the show ended, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
There were some
weird
circumstances around the call, but you got Aaron on the phone. Anyway, we'll get into that in a second. Alex Anthopoulos, former Jays GM, current Braves GM, we'll talk to him. Current Jays president, Mark Shapiro, we'll talk to him. But right now, we're looking back to one of our best conversations with our NFL analyst, one of our favorite guests, period, week in, week out, Nate Burleson.
Yeah, every Friday he talks to us, and on November 15th, the day after the Browns and Steelers were involved in one of the most insane things that we have seen on an NFL football field in a long time, we had more Real Talk with Nate Burleson.
All right, Nate, last night, or whenever you saw the incident first, your initial reaction was what?
That it was inexcusable. Because the first thing that you pay attention to in a fight is the worst part of the fight. And I think we all agree the worst part of it is Myles Garrett snatching the helmet off of Mason Rudolph and then knocking him in the head with it. You can't have that in this game. I said over and over on the show that he was in the wrong. But then once you really start paying attention to it, you understand that he's not the only one that's in the wrong. There's also a Marquise Pouncey who jumped in. And, of course, you know, he's protecting his quarterback. He's swinging viciously, trying to connect with Myles Garrett. He's kicking at Myles Garrett. And the reason I say he's in the wrong, not because of his actions. I understand why he did it. He's right for protecting his quarterback. He's wrong because now he throws himself in the mix, and he's up for suspension. And also, when you swing a closed fist at somebody's helmet, it can end bad. Like, I've seen guys get in fights at practice and in games, crack somebody in the face mask, and then a day later come back to the team remorseful saying, I broke my hand in the fight. So that's why I said that Pouncey was wrong. And then third tier, Mason Rudolph was wrong as well. Like, he didn't deserve to get hit. I don't want anybody to get my words twisted. He didn't ask to be hit. I don't want anybody to get my words twisted. But if you're pushing Myles Garrett up off you, you hit him in the groin, and then you try to rip his helmet off, the only difference is Myles Garrett is stronger, so he successfully rips yours off. And then after that, walk away. And this isn't placing blame on Mason Rudolph. This is speaking from firsthand experience. I've been in these scuffles and fights where my helmet comes off, and the first thing I think is, let me protect my face and my head. I'm not going to go running into the fight. You for damn sure don't run up to the guy who's holding your helmet. So, you know, there's three tiers of blame: Myles Garrett, Pouncey, and of course Mason Rudolph. But this all could have been avoided. I think if they would have been focused on de-escalating it and guys setting their egos aside and not trying to be tough, I think this would have stopped before it even started. I just hope that we don't see something like this again.
What's crazy is it benefits a bunch of teams, because these are two teams that could be right in the hunt when you break it down and what the rest of the schedule is for the Browns. We hear indefinitely for Myles Garrett. If you're the guy handing down the sentence on this, what does that indefinitely turn into?
it turns into figuring out what type of man Myles Garrett is, if this was an isolated incident, even though he's had a few penalties before. And then once you confirm that this is one of those things where he just literally, he just blew a gasket.
Yeah.
Then from there, you say to yourself, okay, let's get this guy back on the field. You know, because I don't know Myles Garrett personally. From what I've seen from a bird's eye view, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. He doesn't seem like a malicious individual. Joe Thomas, the well-respected Cleveland Brown, the legend there, he said, you know, from what I know about Myles Garrett, he's a very chill, relaxed guy that wouldn't do something like this. So I say eventually he gets back on the field. Indefinitely means let's strike the hammer down. Let's make it sound definitive when it's really not. I do feel like Myles Garrett will get back on the field. This season might be a stretch. It might be a tough ask for Myles Garrett to appeal it and say, I want to be back this year. But if I'm him, I do. I go out there and explain my side of it. I explain my case, and I try to get back on the field. You got to eat the fine, whatever they fine you. Don't argue that. But if you want to get back on the field, why not? And let's be clear. You guys know like I know, and people that are watching, this isn't something that we haven't seen before. Now, this may be the first time you've seen a guy grab a helmet, swing it, and connect with somebody else's head, but we've seen helmets get ripped off before. We saw Kyle Turley rip somebody's helmet off and toss it 50 yards. I've been at practices and preseason games where I've seen guys get their helmet ripped off, and then the one holding the helmet swing it recklessly. They just didn't connect. And it was one of those moments where, you know, in that moment at practice, it's like, whoa, 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 too far, bro. And then from there, the person who might be attempting to swing the helmet realizes I'm tripping. Kyle Brandt on the show this morning, he said something that made a lot of sense that people can relate to because we all watch movies and have seen this happen. And maybe some of us who live, you know, a very rough lifestyle may have actually been involved in something like this. He said it's like being in a fight and one person pulls out a knife and you're like, whoa, whoa, bro, this isn't that type of fight. And I think that's what was so jarring about it, that in a scuffle, a melee, which we've all seen 1,000 times on a football field, swinging a helmet just isn't something we're used to seeing. So it was unfortunate. It was very ugly. But it isn't one of those things where I'm just so appalled that I'm disgusted in a way that I want to turn my face from watching football again. Unfortunately, I've seen it before. And this is the player's perspective. I don't want people to say, Nate, you're being insensitive, dismissive, and you're shifting the blame. No, I'm not. I get that it is something that will shock you once you see that. But I've seen it before, time and time again. It just happened on the biggest stage in the biggest moment with the only game being on TV.
Listen, one more on this, and then I want to move on to Colin Kaepernick. Is there any irony in the Browns playing with such passion at 3-6 in a game on national TV against a heated rival with basically their season on the line? Like, I was asking myself, where was this the other 9 games?
Yeah, I believe that they realized that they might be on the list of fake bad teams.
Yeah.
They were so terrible in the beginning of the season, and it started to bother them. Because what happens is you get to the point in the year where you're past the midway point and you realize your dreams of making it into the postseason or even going to a Super Bowl are slipping away. And it's frustrating. I remember I got to a point when I was playing Detroit and we weren't going to make the playoffs. And I looked at Calvin Johnson and I said, hey, yo, let's just be the villains. Let's be the bad guys. And not in the sense we're going to go out there and hurt DBs or cut their legs out or try to end their careers. It was basically me saying, yo, when we go play a team, let's try to ruin their season. And I felt like the Browns were playing that type of way. It just spilled over in the most nasty of ways.
All right, let's move to Colin Kaepernick, as Tim suggested. I've read different stories on tomorrow's workout in Atlanta, Nate, all week. I still have no idea why the NFL's doing this. Do you?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's really a clear understanding of why they're doing it right now. I mean, if you want to give Colin Kaepernick a fair opportunity of being picked up, have this workout right at the end of training camp when teams are figuring out their quarterback situation. Have it at the beginning of the year when all of these quarterbacks went down and some teams are playing with third stringers. Maybe that there's so much conversation about this being a year where backup quarterbacks are playing so much. And you can't help but to think, if you're a football fan and can look just as recent as 4 years ago, that Cap was a beast And yet we're seeing guys that, for a lack of better words, couldn't hold his jock. I think maybe the NFL got tired of the whispers and said, all right, let's give him an opportunity. And for Cap, even though he hasn't been saying much, I hear he's been working out like crazy. I do commend both sides, though. I've always wanted to hear more from Cap. I don't care about tweets or him posting videos of working out. I want to hear him come out and say, I want to play. And as far as the NFL, being that I work for the NFL, I wanted them to do something about that. I wanted them to do something about him getting an opportunity. So we can't say, oh, well, you know, Cap hasn't had an opportunity to show his skill set this many years later. Now both sides can meet. I don't know how authentic or inauthentic it is. What I do know is Cap is going to work out. He should show out. He's going to look good. From there, it's up to coaches and teams to make a decision whether they want to have a guy that, in my opinion, will be one of the top 32 quarterbacks, let alone top 64 on their roster.
All right, so we all agree that he is good enough to be in the NFL. It seems like this is not part of, at least according to multiple sources, this is not part of his settlement with the league. This isn't right. The collusion grievance being right. Played out somewhere. So for Colin Kaepernick, was maybe part of this that a lot of teams didn't want to be the first to bring him in? So then you have somewhere central where everyone can answer the questions as opposed to just one team. Because you know, if one team brought him in or signed him, there would be some sort of circus that would follow him in. Could this mitigate all of that?
Yeah, I believe so. And to keep it very simple, and this is something my wife would say to my kids when it came to eating their vegetables at a young age. If you try it, you might like it. Right. And I know that's very elementary, but think about this for a quick second. However you want to break down Colin Kaepernick not playing. And there may be certain teams that said, listen, we don't want Cap on our team because our quarterback situation is straight. We don't want Cap on our team because we feel like, you know, he's going to come in and it's going to be all about him. Whatever it is, I think now, so many years later, I think Cap is going to be able to provide at least a glimpse into what he looks like. And if you see him, then you might have an idea that's contrary to what you have thought for the last 3 years. You might say, damn, I mean, now that I see him in person, I mean, I knew he was working out, but I didn't know he looked this good. So if you try it, you might like it. I think this is an opportunity for Cap to at least go out on his own terms, giving everybody a fair look at him. And how could you argue if there's footage of him working out, which I heard that every team will see this footage, and you're staring at your quarterback who might not be as good. You're staring at a backup quarterback who didn't even start in college. And you're staring at a third stringer who you'll never put on the field. I think once you see the footage, you have to address the fact that you're looking at your quarterback room more honestly than ever. And I think this is the opportunity for Cap to force teams to do that.
We only got about 20 seconds, Nate. In 2020, does Colin Kaepernick play in a regular season game? Yes or no?
Yes, 100%. I feel like Cap will play. Just look at the quarterbacks that played this year. I refuse to say that a quarterback's a bum. Because when you make it to this level, you're part of the elite group. But when you look at some of the second and third stringers in this league, Cap could have provided a skill set for some of these squads that would have helped them make the playoffs. And most of the teams that refuse to bring Cap in will be sitting at home watching playoffs just like you and me.
A big thank you to Nate. We know he will continue to bring it in that fashion in 2020.
Spit hot fire.
I'm glad every week he comes on because he's getting big. And I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to talk to him, but he's fantastic. Coming up on the Best of Tim and Sid, a little food for thought. Who do you think weighs more between Tim and I? We managed to spend a whole show in August on this very subject.
Hey, I'm big-boned, okay?
That's what I keep telling people as well, Tim.
Big-boned.
We've got the answer for you next. It's the Best of Tim and Sid here on Sports.
Remember, muscle weighs more than fat.
Yes. And the microphone adds 20 pounds.
Welcome back to the Best of Tim and Sid here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Coming up at 6 o'clock hour, we chat with Aaron Sanchez just after he was traded by the Blue Jays. Then we talk to the man who drafted Aaron Sanchez. His name is Alex Anthopoulos. You might remember him. And we asked Mark Shapiro to take your questions in studio. He said yes. We thought it was good TV and radio.
But first, what you've all been waiting for. The weight challenge that you didn't know you needed, but you got. Sometimes during the dog days of summer around here, if we can be honest with each other,
yep,
We find ways to fill 2 hours of content.
Correct.
There's only so many Mitch Marner stories during the summer you can talk about. So the conversation at one point this summer between Tim and I went towards girth, our weight, our fat.
Okay, good.
You get the picture.
No, I'm glad you got off girth just and it became... All right, August 22nd, Sid decided to start the show by asking everyone around him how much they thought he weighed. I got involved, and the show went off the rails.
Seb, behind the camera, we've known each other at least a year. Am I over 200 pounds? His answer was, aw. Just so we're clear. I asked him, am I over 200 pounds?
Oh, yeah.
And my Guy Lafleur says, aw.
Let me be honest with you.
Way more than that.
I thought you were way more than that. Now, if you have that LeBons and chicken legs underneath,
kind of,
which
pull back,
you know how there's some guys
where
it's,
talking about.
Every day it's arm day. With Sid, every day it's stomach day. He just works on his stomach, and that's where all the weight is. Question is not, am I fat? We know the answer to that.
I think that is the question.
It's how much do you weigh? There's a difference there.
Well, let's
there's
take
good
bets.
Weight.
Let's take bets.
Muscle
Jules
weight
Seb,
more than
Dagan,
fat.
McAuliffe, and you at home at Tim. Oh, I'm sure the tweets are flying. Like I got to ask for that. Yeah. McAuliffe, write it down right now.
No, do
how much do I weigh right now?
No, hold
right
on.
Right now. We're
hold
at
on.
The X, and I'm asking you how much do I weigh.
By the way you're acting, there's like this confidence that you're around 2 bills. And if I looked at you, I would say over 2 bills.
How much do I weigh?
If you're under 200 pounds, it tells us way more about the lack of muscle on your body. Because, homie, you look like you're over 2 bills easy. No one is going under 2.
Not a single tweet's under 2? The goal here isn't to make you feel poorly at home.
So let's.
We're just having some fun here. But if you don't live my life and look worse than me, you got problems.
All right, man. We're gonna get a scale. I've been told we will get a scale
when we're off air. I'd like you to weigh yourself.
Oh, I would do it on air. I don't mind.
Really?
I have no problem. Yeah.
Because if you're heavier than me,
you see me. They see me.
I'm more concerned about you than you are concerned about me.
I am most definitely heavier than you. But as we have talked about in the past,
he's not.
Is this my weighing music?
This
here?
Is your stand up and get the shot. Seb, cameraman, zoom in. Tim McAuliffe, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on, that's not really my ass.
Next on the
ass. That's not really my ass. No, there's a mic pack.
Boy, that's at least 150 pounds of ass there. Look at that. Look at that.
Tim Kardashian, what's going on right here? You know what I'm saying? You can put a drink on that right there. Huh?
Is that Tim McAuliffe or Vladdy Jr.?
Dutty wine right here.
Look at that. What's right, your on base?
That's my microphone pack.
Coming up next on the date auction.
Okay, but look, like, so I and what
no,
I,
you look
what
like I, a normal dude though.
What
like
I still you, have? No, I got the Labanzole.
That's not the Labanzole.
But I have, and this is going to be the difference here, and that I don't think Sid understands is, and you can make your guess on me. I still have traps. Like my arms aren't tiny anymore, so there's still some muscle
like,
in here
sorry,
that's
like,
going to make me weigh more than you.
You have mouse traps? You should talk to some people around here.
Tim
McAuliffe, ladies and gentlemen.
And I'll say this. My chest, while now revealing breasts, was never concave. So there's going to be a little bit more weight through here and in here.
Dude, if you weigh more than me, I'm doing a lap around the building.
But you understand.
A lap.
Hold on.
A lap.
But you understand that me weighing more than you might be an indictment on you.
No, I win.
Because you look like you should perhaps weigh more than me around here. The debate rages on. One, how much does Sid Sixero weigh? The scale is in the building. Two, do I weigh more? We started with Sid. How much does Sid weigh? 180 to 200.
I heard someone say 213. Really?
2 to 210.
213.
Or over 210.
Yeah, no.
Right now, over 210, dominating the vote on Megaphone. Now, Dave has a tweet and asks an important question.
I'm sure it's not that important.
Are we counting all the weight in the product in Homer's hair? I believe you are Homer.
Oh, I am Homer. Boom.
Right.
Boom face.
Nikki says 195.4
Hashtag Sid's weight. Hashtag no muscle.
I'll take it, Nikki. Thank
you. I don't think you should.
That's a compliment.
Remember, the camera and sour cream and onion chips add 10 pounds. Sid, 217.8. Tim, 221.3.
Oh, let's go. Let's go. Chris Johnston literally has gotten off a plane from his European excursions joining us. CJ, I know you were probably exhausted and jet-lagged, and great job in Europe last week. Tremendous. You are on deck to guess my weight. If you would like to guess my weight, you can do it now.
I just don't think you should be doing this at all, if I'm being honest. I don't see any upside in this for you. But, man, and I guess I have to put this out there as well. I've always been on the husky, stocky side myself, so I'm not throwing any darts here.
All
but
right. Well, bless your heart.
I'm going to put you in at 210.
210.
All right, well, we've run out of time with Chris Johnson 210. Here on Tim and Sid.
Mike writes in and says, Tim and Sid is the new body break. If you mean which breaking the body.
Which one's Hal?
Body Joanne? Break!
Joe Not Joe says, I'm saying 188.
Whoa!
Height also has something to do. Let me just say this.
Height does measure weight.
If Sixero is 188, he's going to tip over.
I really should see a doctor tomorrow if I'm 188.
Jeremy, 180 to 200, are we guessing on what we can see above the desk? And Warren,
if it's way to say, hold on, don't blow past that.
All right, sorry.
If it's below the desk.
I should have gone right past that.
240.
And Warren Park Hockey, who I've played in the past, I believe this is Portuguese.
Sid's Barriga, which is hashtag Sid's Stomach.
So, Sixero, how do we do this? Do we take shirts off? Do we take jackets off?
Off.
Who goes first? Do I go first? Do you go first? How do you want to do this?
Let me go first.
Jackets off?
Let me go first. My wife texted me reminding me the mic packs add another 30 pounds.
What, 30 pounds?
So, Azo, I need you to hold my thing and while I do this. I'll go first.
I think I go first.
I will set
the tone and show you how to use this. Because I know you often have times using things in the
we
studio.
We have weighing music, by the way. Are you listening to this?
What?
Well, there's weighing. Listen Hold to the on. Music they picked for the weighing.
Hold on.
This is happening.
All right.
All right. Let me see this.
Okay.
So not that I don't trust you, but I think you're a cheater. Tim McAuliffe is weighing in. Wait for it. Locked in 211.8 for Tim McAuliffe. 211. Outstanding. You weigh.
Sixero weigh more or less. Azo, 211.
Hold my mic.
No, I have the mic on.
All right.
You can take the mic off if you want.
We have 1 minute. I'm going to milk this for everything it's worth.
Wow. Someone's going to milk you for everything you're worth.
By the way, Marcus Stroman pitches next. Height doesn't measure heart, but we're gonna measure weight here.
All right. The moment of truth. Yeah.
Push the button.
You have to push the button.
You have to push the button.
Off the thing. Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
Wait, here we go.
Oh, here we go.
Here
and
we go.
208, 210, 297.
207.4.
Oh,
207.4. 207.. Sixero, baby! Let's go!
Are you celebrating?
Let's go!
Are you celebrating?
Kids, let me tell you something. Exercise is for losers. Okay?
You're not Sid.
Marcus Stroman next.
Are you suggesting that's healthy?
I'm out. Look at him. Don't look at me. I'm done.
Are you suggesting
I'm exhausted.
Either of these things are healthy?
Whatever, fatty.
I would just like to remind everyone, muscle weighs more than fat. And I guess I have a New Year's resolution. Coming up after the break, Aaron Sanchez.
Way, thank
no,
you.
Let's just move
thank
on.
Thank you for doing it. You didn't have to do it. It made me feel really good about myself.
All right. We'll talk to him about being traded. If there was a future in Toronto, was he offered an extension with the Jays? We'll get those answers on the other side. You're listening to the best of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Time for Tim and Sid. Oh, yeah. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sixero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. Welcome back to the Best of Tim and Sid. Another 60 minutes coming your way. We'll hear from former Jays GM Alex Anthopoulos, as well as current Jays president Mark Shapiro. But first, Timmy, remember when I was off during the summer for those 3 days?
Oh, my God. Five weeks.
Whatever. It was glorious.
5 weeks.
It was glorious.
5 weeks.
Well, while I was off, I don't think it's important to go over the numbers.
5 weeks.
The Blue Jays, while I was off, decided to trade what felt like everybody for half the team. Eric Sogard, gone. Marcus Stroman, gone. Daniel Hudson, gone. As well as Joe Biagini and Aaron Sanchez to the Astros on deadline day. Usually players don't want to talk immediately after being traded, Tim. You've been in the business long enough. You know that.
Yeah.
But Aaron Sanchez is a different kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he joined Tim and Donovan Bennett. I was off that day. Just moments after news
of the trade dropped.
Well, I was on vacation, whatever. It also turned out to be one of the best interviews of 2019. Listen to this.
Aaron, welcome back to Tim and Sid.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for doing this. Were you surprised by the deal when you heard about it today?
I mean, it's just one of those things where you never know. Obviously, you know, time's getting to the end, the deadline's coming to an end, and a lot of things are happening, a lot of moves are being made. your name's always kind of being thrown around, so there's always a possibility, but it's a part of the business. It's part of the game. Things like this happen, and you can't lose any steps on it. You know, like I said before, I'm going down to Houston, and I gotta do exactly what I've done here, and let's go pitch and compete and go out there and battle with these boys. So, as much as it was a shock, it is what it is. It's part of the business. It's part of the game, and you know, I'm not the only guy that's gone through this in their career, so it's definitely an adjustment. But like I said, it's one that was going to happen probably, if not this year, maybe next year. So, like I said, bittersweet, but I'm happy to be in Houston. But happy to be a Houston Astro. I'm happy to go down there and learn from the guys that they got, and it's going to be an exciting time.
You mentioned if it didn't happen this year, maybe next year. Did the front office keep you in the loop in terms of what may or may not happen in terms of trade? And were there any discussions potentially about an extension and staying in Toronto?
I mean, obviously, your name's always getting thrown around. It's hard, right? Like, things come up so quick. I'm sure, like, something today came up so quick. My name was thrown around there, you know, a lot more the last few days than it had been in the past. So, they obviously, as much as I wanted to stay, they wanted to keep me. It was a deal that made sense to them, and now here we are. There had been times before in the past where, you know, extensions had come up, but things kind of didn't reach an agreement there, and I was focused on trying to win games for the team. So we kind of put that aside. I went out there and did my thing, and this just happens to be where we're at. You know, there's no hard feelings between the two parties. Like I said, it's a business. There are things like that happen in the game. And like I said, I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to go down there, go back to pitching playoffs, and have a chance to hold up one of those trophies at the end of October. You know, that's why you play the game of baseball. And, you know, these group of guys that I'm going to meet up with here have done it before. And like I said, it's an opportunity that you dream of, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
And it's been a tough couple of years for you. In fact, we were sat at opening day with you, and you showed us pictures of what you went through with the fingernail and how you had to battle through all of these things. And in the last couple of starts, we've seen you really find something. Do you feel like you're ready to turn the corner from those problems?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. When things like this come up, nobody really has the answer for them. You know, we tried things that so to speak, didn't work. And in between all that, you know, I altered my mechanics just to even make a pitch 60 feet, 6 inches, right? And now,
right,
over time, you try to break those habits. And sometimes it's harder breaking habits than starting habits, right? So that was kind of where I was stuck at for the longest time. And then to, you know, have it back-to-back years. And I don't think people really understand how affecting that is to a pitcher, right? Like, the last thing that your ball touches are your two fingertips, and when I've had so many problems with that, I knew for me it was, if I can keep my body healthy, all that other stuff will come. And like I said time and time again, I know it's coming, and you know, it shows. I knew the guy that was in 16 had never left. You know, it was just a little bump in the road, and I'm happy to, you know, have my last 5 to 6 starts, you know, feeling like myself, being able to go out there and not really have to think about all this other stuff, just go out there and compete and pitch, and I think the results showed. Obviously, you know, early in the year, I would have liked to have a better thing, but at that point, I was maybe 4 or 5 months out of a major surgery dealing with my hand. So, you know, put all those into play, and that's kind of what you get. But, you know, I'm not going to use that as an excuse as to why things shaked out the way they did. Like I said before, I take the ball. I'm responsible. I'm a man. I'll answer questions, and it is what it is.
Did any of that cause any frustration? Some have suggested that there was frustration between you and management because of the way the rehab went or how hard it was to come back. Is any of that close to the truth? And does going to Houston kind of give you a fresh start?
I mean, it's frustrating when you're dealing with injuries in general, right? Like, you can't point the finger at anybody. It's part of the nature of the game when injuries occur. And, you know, it's frustrating. It was only frustrating at the point that, you know, that things happened and it was my fingers. So, like I said, I'm happy to be with the Houston Astros. I'm happy to go down there and learn from these guys and be a part of a team that, you know, has a chance to do really special things this year. And it's going to be fun.
You've always been awesome to us. You've always been awesome to most of the fans here in Toronto. Just want to thank you and wish you the best in Houston.
Yeah, you know, I feel the same way about you guys. I watch you guys every day in the clubhouse, and, you know, you guys are always a treat to watch. You guys have some debates that are pretty interesting. So, you know, likewise, thank you for always being professional to me, and, you know, we'll see you down the road.
Thanks, Aaron Sanchez, for that candid chat and for joining us right after being dealt.
Yeah.
Sticking with baseball, Alex Anthopoulos has now gone to the playoffs twice in 2 years with the Atlanta Braves. Not trying to rub it in, just offering statistics for
it's
your
facts.
Perusal.
Yep, it's fact.
He joined us late in August to talk about his team's continued success.
Alex, there is no waiver trade deadline next week. Do you wish there was?
Yes. Yes, 100%. And I will say this. So if I take my current GM of the Braves hat on, absolutely, because we've had some things that have gone on with us, some injuries and so on. Like, you take a guy like Galvis, for example, you know, we would have loved to have had a guy like that. Like a lot of clubs would, we had our shortstop go down. And, you know, you're obviously winning, so you're high up in the standings. You're late in a claiming process, so that's good. But when you have injuries and what if you have a guy out for the season, it's challenging. I do think now, if I take my for the good of the game hat on, I think from a player standpoint, knowing that after July, for the most part, they don't have to worry. Their wives and families don't have to worry. They can feel pretty confident that they're not going to go anywhere. And then I also think the clubs that are on the fence about whether they're going to tear it down or not, with 2 months left, you're going to tell your fan base you have to walk into your clubhouse and tell your players you're going to strip the team down. I think some clubs decided, you saw some guys that were going to be free agents that didn't get moved. So I think from a parity standpoint, competitive standpoint, especially as you get into September, the league and the game will probably be better across the board. So from a selfish standpoint, with the position we're in and the injuries we sustained, I would say yes. But if I'm taking a giant step back, this has probably been good for the game overall from a competitive balance standpoint.
But is there a way to massage it? Like, is August 15th more of a proper representation of where teams may be? And if you bring in a player into the fold for the postseason, 6 full weeks to integrate, 6 full weeks to get familiar.
Move the one deadline
back. I don't mind the one deadline, but I'm getting the feeling, Alex, you thought it was obviously maybe a little soon. August 15th-ish, would that do it for you? Or would you just do it, go right to August 31st on a full deadline?
I mean, I guess, I think whatever date you have, it's all relative to your club and what happened. So, look, I guess I look back now. It was fun in the month of August that you can still try to be creative and still try to make some big deals. And I was still a big contract might get through. And you saw some big players get traded, whether it was the Adrian Gonzalez trade with the Red Sox and the LA Dodgers years ago, or Verlander and things like that. And even I can tell you, you know, my last year with the Jays, we had talked to a club about acquiring a big player, big contract. And we just were like, you know what, we don't need to deal with this at the end of July. Let's get through some stuff. We'll run them through trade waivers, and we could probably still negotiate in the month of August, which obviously didn't go anywhere. But it's fun from a front office standpoint to still be able to be creative and make some deals and do some things. It's always fun to be able to make some trades and transactions. But I do think overall, if you're talking about parity, especially September, some of the rosters, get are pretty thin and fans, and you're competing with the other sports. This is probably good for the game, and it'll force front offices, ours certainly right there included, to really try to insulate yourself and have as many bodies as you can and plan accordingly and be pretty relentless about adding guys any chance you can get. So I think we'll all adjust to it over time.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is it going to change drastically? If it stays the same, do you think you'll handle the deadline a little bit differently than you did this year?
Yeah, I think we tried to handle it in a different way. So knowing that this was it, because you always in the past, July 31st, you push, but you're like, you know what? I don't have to make a deal right now. I can still make a move or two in the month of August. And you may not really push to get the deal across the goal line. Now, I think, you know, speaking from our own club, we probably added an extra body or two that we wouldn't have just to protect ourselves.
Right.
And we probably pushed a little harder, gave up a little more, made stronger offers. Because, you know, what you don't want to have happen is the 31st will pass, which will happen in the past. In the month of August, if you regret something or you should have done this, you can still try to make amends and come up with some type of deal. You don't want to be sitting there in the month of August and say, you know what, we came this far, we had a great team, we could have done a little more and we didn't do it, and there's no way out. So that was our mindset, and I think clubs will probably take stock at the end of the year and go through it. We'll do it as well. But I think for the most part, we played it the way we wanted to.
All right. But selfishly, I'm right there with you, Alex. I kind of miss it. It was fun. It was
yeah.
just another option.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Just yep. an option for us to yep. talk about, an option for you, for the bullpen, for your 25-man, whatever you were thinking. Anyway, hopefully next year maybe it's pushed back a little later and we have more to talk about. I want to talk about your current roster.
Mm-hmm.
You are the Josh Donaldson whisperer, aren't you? Like, this is he's back. Like, I don't, like, what do you, like, do you put stuff in his water? Like, what's the relationship like between you and Josh?
You know what? We were just talking on the clubhouse 2 days ago. Obviously, we're talking about the road trip. We have a bit of a crazy one. We go to New York, then we have to go play a makeup game in Colorado and then Toronto. And, you know, I talked to Soroka about, you know, going to Toronto again, having the throw there, what it's like. I asked Josh as well, hey, how do you feel about going back? Your media is going to be all over you, fans. And, you know, I think he's excited. I know he's excited. I know it. You know, in talking to him about it, I think it's, you know, you realize – you know, really spending some time, how much that place meant to him. And, you know, we just talked about what an unbelievable place it is to play and, you know, the fan base and everything else. And I think, you know, he was there a long time, and I don't want to speak for him, but just generally speaking, I think the city, the country really had an impact on him in his career. And I think he's really excited to get back there, and the place means a lot to him. So, look, in terms of him playing well and being a good player again, you look at his career, sure, you know, even 2017, he had a very good year. He missed time. It was his first time on the IL. 2018 was obviously a lost year. But the way he came back in September, as small a sample as that was, he was back to the guy he was. 17, he was that guy. He just had a few less games and at-bats. So we paid him the biggest one-year contract in the history of the game. So we made a big bet, and not that we felt 100% he would get back to this level, but we felt there was a very good chance for us to spend that kind of money, even though it's a one-year deal. It was a big chunk of our dollars. It was the first move that we made, and we felt pretty strongly that he had a very, very good chance to go back and be an elite guy. I mean, when we lined things up, we had Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, Josh, and we felt those were the three best middle-of-the-order bats in terms of free agents. And we felt like Josh had as good a chance to be as good as those two, if not surpass those two, from a total value standpoint, offense, defense, all that kind of stuff. So he just needed to stay on the field and stay healthy. And I think with all the work that we did, we thought there was a pretty good chance. So he still has another 5 weeks to go, hopefully before we get to October. But he's been awesome. And he's, you know, from what I'm seeing, he's back to that guy. And even talking to some of our players about him and what he brings, Ender and Ciarte was just telling me this the other day in the clubhouse, just the energy, the grit, how tough he is. You know, and Ciarte talked to me about when Nick Markakis got hurt and Ciarte had to jump in, and how Josh just kind of grabbed him before Ciarte jumped back in the game. He said, well, lock in. And just that competitor, that drive to win. And he just talked about that swagger and that confidence that we have the chance to beat anybody on the field, whether it's a Cy Young winner or MVP candidates. And those are the other intangibles that he brings to a competitive club.
Do you think getting off the turf in Toronto helped him stay healthy?
You know, I know there was a lot of talk about that, even way back when Troy Glaus was there and so on. I think that was a little overstated. I personally, you know, when I was there, I obviously didn't like the narrative. I didn't like that being out there. I didn't like the other narrative about taxes and so on. And, you know, speaking of which, I remember 2015 sitting in the lounge with Josh at some point. It could have been the month of August or September. And I just asked him about, you know, this whole thought about Toronto and playing here and challenges and no ESPN and all that. I mean, do you buy any of that? And his response was, all of it is really, I mean, in a lot of ways, he said, all of it didn't matter. He goes, you guys hadn't won here. And all that you needed to do was win. And when you win, people want to come, players want to come, players want to show up there. So I think any other narrative that was out there, country, currency, travel, TV channels, all that kind of stuff, it's irrelevant. I just don't buy it. I don't subscribe to it. You have a winning competitive club. When guys get to free agency, they've been to their All-Star games, they're going to make money regardless. At that point, they want to win, and they want to go to a winning club. So, you know, turf never came up. And I really never had players really come to me, other than Gloss. I was in the gym at the time. I never really had players complain about it.
Right. I don't think it's the television channels, but I mean, maybe I'm biased.
I think it's great TV. I think it's great TV.
Listen, Toronto is special to Josh. Toronto is special for a lot of people, especially during those runs in 2015, 2016. It was special to the fans, to us watching. Are you surprised that most of the teams that made those runs in 2015 and 2016 are now gone from Toronto?
No, I just think it's sports, right? Things are going to change. The team's going to turn over, but again, I haven't been able to follow as closely, not being in the AL, but just it looks like, you know, there's a good young core there that's starting to come together. Players that fans can connect with, and they're certainly starting to turn the corner and get a lot better and be competitive. So, you know, ultimately there's going to be turnover. Look, even when I was there in Toronto, we used to sit there and at times talk about, well, we'd have guys like Anthony Gose or Brett Laurie or Sean Markham or McGowan or Morrow, Romero, Lind, Hill. Things change. You have to be able to adjust and adapt, and players get hurt, performance changes, guys come out of nowhere. It's been, 4 years for me, I guess. And, you know, there's going to be turnover at some point. So it's just part of sports, no matter where you are. But I think, you know, the big thing in all the turnover and everything else is that I think everybody now knows the upside is there. It's a large market. They led the American League in attendance, I believe, 2 years in a row. We know how big the market is with across Canada and the city, and the upside there is huge. So it's been shown, even with having the other teams there. I always remember Paul Beeston telling me that, watch, when we win here, you're going to see it. And I said, well, I didn't grow up in Toronto. Back in the day, Paul, you know, you guys didn't have the Raptors. You only had the Leafs, and there were so many other options now in Toronto. And from an entertainment dollar standpoint, and he was right. Clearly he was right. And Toronto's booming. There's so many things to do. But you have a winning competitive club. That place is off the charts. It's as good as you're going to find.
Before we let you go, Alex, I mean, if not for guys named Yelich and Bellinger, Ronald Acuña Jr. is probably the leading candidate for MVP in the National League, and he's a player of yours. Moment over the weekend, though, they got a lot of people talking. He thought he hit a home run. He didn't hustle out of the box. Pulled from the game by manager Brian Snitker. You, on the sidelines watching that play out as the GM of that team, are you thinking to yourself, this goes one of two ways here, and this is a really important moment?
You know what? I would say as a young GM, 100% that thought's going through my mind. And also as a young GM and an experienced GM, you're sitting there just worried about all kinds of things. I think over time, where you realize that the organization is bigger than one player in one moment. And also, look, knowing Ronald, the person, knowing our clubhouse, he's an unbelievable kid guy, all of the above. Dave Roberts pulled Cody Bellinger last year for the same thing. Clint Hurdle did it to Andrew McCutchen years ago. It's pretty common in our game. I think it's more of a story if you don't do it, to be candid with you. But I will tell you, early on in my career, there were some times where the player may have done something and you're not sure how you should reprimand the player, because what if it gets out? What if his trade value is impacted? All those things. And then you realize that's not really the way you need to consider things. This, you know, you're playing the long game. You have 24 other guys on the team. You're setting the tone and example for everybody else. You know, our manager did this with Ender Inciarte last year, and Ender Inciarte said, look, you know what? I was irritated. I should have ran the ball out. I didn't. He pulled him out of the game. I think it's just a standard that he set, and players come to expect it. So, you know, I think if you have a different type of clubhouse, different makeup and so on, it can go a certain way. But, you know, I remember in Toronto, Pilar wasn't the same thing, but, you know, Gibby pinch hit for him. Pilar got upset. I remember I was scouting. Gibby called me and said, I want to send this guy down, and 100% you need to support him. And Pilar handled it the right way, and I think he got better for it in terms of his career. So I expected him to do it. It was the right thing to do. I think it sets a tone to the team, and I think that's what makes him very good at his job.
Thanks for the candor there, Alex. And I don't know if we'll get to see you face-to-face next week when you're in town, but enjoy the trip back into town. Alex, it's always fun. Have a good weekend. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Enjoy it.
That was former Blue Jays GM Alex Anthopoulos. Coming up after the break on the best of Tim and Sid here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, current Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro. He joined us in studio for a mini State of the Union and answers some of your questions. That
your
is
question.
Next.
Your question.
Your question.
Your question.
Not just my questions. Not just Tim's
questions. Questions.
Your questions. We took some tweets.
Right.
We'll play the segment next. This is Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Your questions. Welcome back to the best of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A look back at our favorite moments and interviews from the past year. Did I turn into radio guy there, Sixero?
I like McCallifrey.
I didn't mean to do that, but I did.
I like it.
And there might not be a more polarizing figure in Toronto sports right now than our next guest, Mark Shapiro.
The last 4 years felt like a lose-lose for him.
Yeah, it did.
If I may, with fans questioning every move the second he got here. Initially, he kept his team competitive. Fans were mad he didn't do a little more. When that window closed and the playoff run was only 2 years, Tim, team committed to a rebuild. And fans were bothered by that, too. Yeah, just can't win.
Bothered by that. 2019, though, was the Jays' worst statistical record in 15 years. And Shapiro joined us on September 17th as the season was winding down to give us an update on where the franchise is at heading into 2020. And you got your shot at the Jays' president.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for coming
in. Yeah, I enjoyed being with you guys.
A lot of things we kind of want to kick around with you, obviously. First things first, 12 games left in the year.
Yeah.
How would you describe it?
I would describe it as great progress. You know, we've transitioned a lot of talent to the major league level. And I think what we've seen shows us that there is real talent there. There are gaps, but there's a lot of real talent there. We've established a standard and a culture that I think behind the scenes demonstrates these guys care about each other. They want to get better. They believe in their ability, which is really important. Like, these guys think they're going to win it next year, which is pretty cool to be around them to feel that. And I think that there's an understanding, and they've competed every single game. Even when we've gone through streaks where we've lost six in a row, we've been in every game, they competed. So I think we leave the season or get close to leaving the season thinking, okay, we've got to transition from competing to winning, which is a big step.
Right.
And we have to continue to develop and plug gaps where we have some gaps.
I think a lot of people want to know how you make that transition.
Yeah. Well, there's two things. You know, one is patience, which it's really hard to have when you're watching. It's hard to have in our job. It's harder to be a fan.
I think a lot of people on Twitter are patient.
I noticed that. Yeah. Social media seems to be.
The strength of Twitter. The
most social media is just a manifestation of patience.
Well, sorry. I didn't mean to jump right into that. I'm sorry, Mark.
I think you understand.
What's Twitter?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump all of that. Sorry.
What's Twitter?
Forgive me.
I mean, the reason why I say patience is because in sport in general, and I was talking about this with someone about the NFL the other day, if you have the ability to stay the course and you have the strength to do it, and you have objective reasons for believing in a player and his ability and his character, you're usually rewarded. But along the way, you're going to go through some really tough moments where you're going to be forced to doubt that player's talent and ability, and you're going to question his effort at times just because you're watching him in the micro every single day. And baseball is every single day. It's 162 times a year. And then we're watching him another 30 down in spring training games. It's really like 45 days. So patience is one thing, and then active development and work. And I think Charlie and our staff this year have been really proactive, and there doesn't tend to be a lot of development in general at the major league level. It tends to be, okay, you got here, we're here to work and help give you the work you need, but you got to take responsibility for your own development. We've been actively working and develop our players this year, which I think we needed to do because a lot of them in a different setting would have been at AAA, you know, for a lot of the year. But we need to keep getting better. We obviously have gaps defensively in particular to fill.
Right.
When I mean, I've heard Ross and you talk about when this team is competing, then you'll add to it. And
contending.
And contending. Forget me.
We're competing now.
So how do you define contending? Because I think that's been a focal point with the fan base in terms of what the actual definition is. How would you define contending?
I mean, to me, it's when we leave spring training with an objective reason to believe that we're capable of winning a playoff spot. That doesn't mean we're capable of winning AL East necessarily.
So a wild card spot in your mind is just as valuable to the progression of this team as being four games out of a division lead at the end of August. That is just as important to you.
Well, I mean, listen, first of all, I always will to the end of my days, will believe just get in, because anything can happen if you get in. Just get in. So the goal is to, you know, initially be playing meaningful games in September, which would definitely be contending, then get into the playoffs, and ultimately to win our division certainly gives you a better chance when you don't have to go into a one game, really what equates to a one game play in rather than a one game playoff. So we want to play meaningful games. That's the next step. Next April, they will be meaningful games because we'll have a clean slate and we'll be starting over again. But we want to play meaningful games now, you know, in September, leading into postseason, and then we want to play in postseason. So there will be steps. Can we skip the steps? Yeah, a lot of the teams that are going to play in the playoffs this year have skipped those steps and have made major jumps. And whether it's Tampa or whether it's Minnesota, you know, teams in the AL that have done that, I think we're capable of making a big jump. More importantly than me thinking that, our players think that. So, you know, we'll look to add, you know, whenever the opportunities present themselves. I don't think we haven't held back doing that now. There's just different sense of urgency at different time. And the other piece is balancing out the opportunities we're presenting to our players. Once we start giving playing time, we have to know there's a clear gap right now. At some point, it will just be upgrade performance, no matter what, because we're, like, right there in the threshold.
Right.
That's probably the delineation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
Yeah, so the different times, like now it's, okay, we don't have a player that we want to give an opportunity to, and we're going to go out and get the best player we can. When we get to a certain point that we're that close within a playoff spot, it's where are we not performing? Not necessarily is it a young player, and we're going to look to upgrade.
So when does that time come? Because I've been on here, and I agree with you on the idea. I love the differentiation between compete and contend.
Yeah.
I understand what you're talking about when you're saying patience. I've been on this desk several times talking about the Astros losing 103 straight years, having pieces
Cubs too.
And having pieces on that team that went through that and came out the other side. But when do you know that it's time to add help to the kids?
I mean, I think we're close to that time. I don't know exactly when that is. It's hard to say, but I do think that we will be opportunistic this winter. You know, I think we'll look. It's not the greatest free agent class, but we all know it's not on that thing you called Twitter, I think. It's somewhere out there that.
I think there's a different way to pronounce it.
We might need some starting pitching. So I think if we can find guys that can, you know, either help our young guys or even better would be help bridge the gap between where we are now to contending, that would certainly, because we do have some really exciting pitching coming, but it's behind our position players, clearly. Right. So we'd start looking at opportunities now. The urgency for that, though, Tim, changes as we get, as it's more clear.
Right.
That's where we are. We're not going to put limits on the team next year.
That's probably wins.
Yeah, that's probably where we sit at different junctures of evaluation. So we'll look at that juncture heading into next year. What do we project the wins to be next year based upon the players and their performances?
Right.
Then we'll look at that again in, like, late June,
right,
you know, next year, and that will be the next window that exists. And then we'll certainly, you know, look at that again as any opportunity we have to bring talent in.
I don't want to be the guy ever, sorry, Sid,
no, go ahead.
That says something when you're not here and then doesn't say it when you're here. And I thought that the team was done a disservice by not having organizational depth at the pitching spot. Did you feel like you let down the ability for this team to win a little bit with the lack of starting pitching that you had?
I feel like we had depth, just the number of injuries we had.
And Richard, it was, Buchholz.
Yeah, so we had those guys, and they all got off and had pretty good, you know, starts. And
I tried to use organizational depth to cover that.
But I mean, we were shopping in, you know, that John Hart, my first boss, used to call it Filene's Bargain Basement, which I think must have been a reference to some, you know, U.S. department store back in the golden era when he came up. But we were shopping in the lower levels of free agency. And if you look back at the history of major league free agent contracts, it's made some pretty smart front office executives look pretty dumb.
Right.
It's a tough, tough, tough area to play. Free agent starting pitching, man, it's a really challenging area to do well. Some of the best deals that we've done here were actually Happ and Estrada, which were, you know, lower end free agent contracts, but guys that had a tie already to Toronto and wanted to be here. So, you know, we're going to have to probably step outside of a comfort zone into an area we know is pretty, pretty dangerous in free agency if we add free agent starting pitching or trade, which is another way to acquire it. But I think what we've tried to do pretty clearly and pretty aggressively is to use every opportunity to trade we possibly can to get numbers of guys in here, you know, and then maybe like a Waggis Pack or a Trent Thornton. You know, an Anthony Kay, like, we need a lot of these guys, and then we need to provide them an opportunity. And that's one of the hardest things, because when I think back to, you know, the things I've been through in my career, Carlos Carrasco is one of the, you know, when he recovers from cancer, one of the best starters in the American League right now. I was in the office when we were about ready to give up on him as a starting pitcher and put him in the bullpen. And 90% of the people in that room were ready to do that, because it just takes a long time with starting pitching for it. Young starting pitching to be what it's going to be at the major league level. It's a challenge. It's hard.
No doubt. I want to talk about you, if I may. Your favorite subject.
My least favorite subject,
You know, the Boston Red Sox and Dave Dombrowski parted ways not that long ago. Details a little murky. You're in a situation with Ross where you're going into an off season. You'll be talking to free agents, trying to solidify their futures. And long-term, we're not sure where you guys are at with Rodgers and Rodgers with you guys. I'll just ask you flat out. Are you happy being the president of the Toronto Blue Jays right now? And what do you see in your future?
The first question is absolutely easy to answer, and I am extremely happy. I love the people I work with. I love where I'm working, absolutely, and I feel really good about where we're headed. I mean, those are some pretty big variables that exist for any of us in work life. The city that I wake up in every day, I feel incredibly fortunate to live here because of the, you know, some of the attributes that really appeal to me in my personal side of life, as well as, you know, it just is a great place, I think, for, you know, our kids to be as well. So I think it's a great city. It's an incredible city from a sports perspective, because we've seen the magnitude of support you get both locally and nationally when you win. And I believe in the group of people that I get to wake up and work next to every day, whether it's people you know like Ross and Charlie, or people like Steve Sanders and Ben Sherrington and Gil Kim, Mike Muirhof, Joe Sheehan, people you don't hear as much about. I feel really fortunate to work with the people that we get to work with every day. And I feel really good about our future and the players. So that, to me, in jobs like this, if you can say yes to those things, then, yeah, this is a job I want. This is where I want to be. There are trade-offs in every single job. I don't care what business you're
Absolutely.
In or right. especially sports. So you pick the things that are great, and you pick the things that you compromise on and settle on. And you do that walking into any situation. I did that in Cleveland, certainly, and there are certainly trade-offs here as well. And then the second part of the question, you know, I honestly don't, I know it sounds crazy, and maybe it's just where I am in my life and my career. I don't give that any thought. I'm not worried about that.
But if a free agent were to ask you in a meeting in San Diego in December at the winter meetings, okay, so you're offering 3 or 4 years. I like you. Where are you going to be in 3 or 4 years?
I'd say I don't think many free agents are going to care whether I'm here or not. They're going to care about.
I don't know about the numbers.
Mark? No, I do think this they care about. They care about the plan. They care about the players. Yeah. They care about the future of the organization. They care about the real reason to believe that you can win. So they want to buy into something, but it ain't Mark Shapiro that they're buying into.
But if it's your plan, that would interest them.
I mean, I think they're more concerned is the plan working than if it's me or not. So, again, there are ways to satisfy those concerns if that does come up, people to have them have conversations with. But it's interesting because it becomes a narrative, I think, publicly, but it's less with players, it's less a narrative. Like, they're, I think they're less concerned. They do want to know if they can win. They do want to know what life looks like, where they're going to play, which it's easy to talk about that and easy to show that. But they're less focused on who the boss is, you know?
I'm really happy that you said yes to a few of the tweets, because every time you come on, we get a bunch of tweets and we end up reading them after, so I might as well bring them to you. I want to get out in front of one, because I read, and speaking of you, I read a really interesting piece on you that you did with Alex Wong of Yahoo Sports. And in that, he had a picture of your whiteboard.
We're going to talk about old school hip-hop right now?
No, but I would like to.
We can if you want.
Yeah, if you want.
Maybe that's off.
The core values of the New Zealand All Blacks was listed on the whiteboard behind you, along with Art of War and some dude named Da Vinci, I think, was on there as well.
Was there one of those All Black code that you like best?
Well, there was one that I wanted to bring up to you.
Okay.
And it was, I don't even know if we can say it on air, but it was no Richard heads. I'll just call it... No Richard
I was wondering whether that would make the censors or not.
Yeah.
So for the record, I thought he could say it in the meeting.
I think you probably
thought. Now, I also wasn't the one saying it.
Right.
But I thought it was.
No rooster head.
I thought it was
no
clean.
Come on.
I think we all know what I'm saying.
Right.
I know in the tweets that we're going to get, people are going to ask a little bit about the past and the team that made the run.
Yeah.
Was that mantra of no Richard heads, did that have something to do with the pieces that were moved out to make room for these kids?
Yeah, I think this is a great opportunity to talk about. A, I didn't write that. You know, I stole that from the All Blacks. That's right. That's their
mantra.
Part of their little black book they give a player. One of the most successful sports franchises in history, not just, you know, what they've been able to accomplish. But, you know, I think because the nature of the situation and circumstance that we walked into, less our own decisions, I've yet to hear anyone give me what the alternative was. Like, we were an aging major league team. We had an inefficient roster because of that. We did not have young players to bring up and start to transition instead of, you know, those players, or to mix in with those players. And we had to play the mathematical odds that players over 35 were not going to keep performing, or over 32, or over 33 were going to start declining, which history tells you in the landscape of the game is going to happen. And we had to figure out a path back to winning, and hopefully sustainable winning. So it was not a statement on those players or those teams. Man, we inherited that, and we tried to keep that going past what most fans wanted us to do. That now the revisionist history is you should have blown it up earlier. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
So it's a loss each way, you know. Like, yes, and I've said it on the record. Yeah. Like, if I was doing the job in a vacuum without seeing what it did for this country, oh, my goodness. Like, seeing that incredible, like, ignition of passionate fan support after not having that for 20 years, I just didn't feel like we could just turn our back on that. I felt like as long as we felt there was any chance we could keep that window open, we needed to try.
Right.
We needed to try. And that meant compromise, and that meant playing in the middle, which is against everything I believe. I believe in being resolute in one direction.
There's been a lot of those teams in this market. It's gotten them nowhere.
It's the cake and
those middling teams.
So, I mean, that's the situation and circumstance. It's not the core belief. You know, the core belief, if you look at the history of decisions that I've made over my career, has been move resolutely and move in one solid direction and keep going in that direction. And I feel good that we're on that path now. It's complete clarity. There's no gray. The history is the history. Right. But that's the truth behind the history. It's not an indictment. It's not distancing ourselves. It's not. We tried to keep it as long as we could, the way we could, which was balancing, which was in the middle, you know. And now we're moving forward.
We'll start with Adam. And he's right to the point, and I like this. Is starting pitching the area of focus in the offseason?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we probably need to continue to think about how we improve defensively. That's internally. We certainly need to get better in the bullpen as well, but starting pitching is the area, as we think externally, the area we'll be focused on.
Awesome. Scott writes in and says, how hard is it to lure big-name free agents to Canada versus in the States, and do Canadian teams have to overpay to make up for taxes and such?
It's a great question. It's always kind of surprised me a little bit. It's something I didn't think twice about coming up here. I still think that, you know, you need to win. You know, there are going to be some players from some segments of the player population that are going to be a little skeptical of living in a different country and think it's a bigger deal. Most that have been here love playing here and love thinking about coming here. It's only are you going to win or not that's on their minds. Right. So I'd say it is easier with some players. It actually appeals to certain players, just the diversity of the market, you know, the open-minded, progressive nature of it. And I think any player would come here, all things being equal or close. Right. If we have the team we want, if we're the team we want to be.
For those of us who were around in 92, 93, we saw that firsthand.
Absolutely.
You guys just wanted to come. Ryan writes in and says, will Vlad move to first base? That's a tough question.
Yeah, Ryan. I don't, as of right now, I don't think so. You know, I think we'll continue to evaluate that. We've seen enough this year to be optimistic and positive that he has a chance to play third base. I think he has to continue to work to take care of his body, because certainly it can't, you know, he's only 20 right now, so he has to continue to improve that. We've seen examples of that with a guy like Rafael Devers, who had a very similar, you know, entree to the game. And
one
then
of the
really,
surprises of the year.
Yeah, really worked hard, and I think Vladdy is determined to do that. He's gotten better during the season, which is hard to do, and I think he'll get better even next year. If that goes the other way, he's going to definitely play first, but I think he's got a chance to play third base.
Awesome. These guys are pretty good. Colin writes in and says, how would you evaluate the work of Ross Atkins this past year? Were you happy with it? And what didn't turn out the way that you had hoped?
Ooh, that's a lot. That's a lot to cover. I'd say, you know, again, I work so closely and I see the process that we go through. I look at Ross not in isolation, because he's rarely making decisions alone. I know that has always been kind of a touch point here, that, you know, people want to know one person's making a decision. We have a very collaborative front office where Ross is gathering information from scouts, gathering information from our analytics department, gathering information from the mental and the medical side, and it usually comes together where the answer is pretty clear and what we're going to do. He does kind of orchestrate that and navigate that through trade deadlines. But, yeah, I felt like he took advantage of the opportunities we had to get better. He identified Charlie Montoyo and built a coaching staff, which is extremely tough to do. That is really good. I feel really good about both the advantages that coaching staff is going to give us and them getting the most out of our players. So in balance, I feel really good. There's always things every one of us think, man, I could have been better this year. You know, that's what you look to get better at next year. I do that for myself. Ross does it for himself. I don't have to evaluate him. He's looking to get better every day.
Our last one was going to be about the upgrades of the Dome, but I think we'll save that for another conversation.
For a winter conversation.
Okay.
I mean, we could have spent an hour. I don't know if you would have enjoyed it, but we could have spent an hour talking to Mark. Yeah. Is that the first time you've taken questions during a live interview in this city before?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I'm willing.
Since trying to take credit for it.
I'm taking complete credit for it.
Let's make sure we get that out on that new social media
platform. The Twitter.
Listen,
we always appreciate you coming by. You gave us extra time today. You didn't have to. So thanks.
Gave them extra time.
My pleasure.
And let's do this again.
Listen, that's not easy. So thanks to Mark Shapiro again. Keeping with the baseball theme, we thought we'd end our show today with one of Sid's better rants from the year. Now, listen. We all know the history between Rougned Odor and the Toronto Blue Jays. And on August 12th, Odor was ruffling some Jays feathers once again, pimping a home run down 15 runs.
I forgot about that.
Then blowing a bubble as he went up the first baseline. Big thanks to Danielle Michaud for filling in for me that day, because as you would expect, Sid was very calm in his response to your boy, Rougned Odor.
An unmitigated blowout, Rougned Odor, and that thing on his chin goes deep. All right? This has no bearing on the game. Now, keep in mind, the fans in Toronto still to this moment, they're all over Rougned Odor. Whether there's 20,000 there, 30, 40, it doesn't matter. So he blows a bubble.
Wow.
The chain is in full swing.
There's 9 buttons undone.
What gets me, though, is this strut after home plate. Look at this guy strutting.
It's a bad look.
Listen, that's a really bad look.
It's a bad look.
I believe this made a 17-4 this home run. A 17-4 home run. Jose Bautista can't flip a bat, but Johnny Hairchin can flip it, blow a bubble, have the chain flying, and then when he comes and hits home plate to bring it to within 17-4, gives it to Conor McGregor on the way back to the visitor's dugout. Let me tell you something. The Blue Jays are all about changing the culture, okay?
Yep.
We have some kids on this roster right now. They seem to be changing the culture a little bit.
The one thing I never liked about that Rangers-Jays interaction was the Jays were never the aggressor. In actuality, in terms of throwing at people.
Right.
I have had it with this guy, and the Jays need to make him wear it before he leaves town. Yeah, I said it. Tonight, day game tomorrow, Rudy and Odor is in Toronto, and the Jays need to start setting a tone with guys like this, who they have a history with. That was funny, Phil. They have a history with him, and they need to make him wear it, because that's ridiculous. Because not only are the Jays already significantly better with this than this Rangers team, but there needs to be a tone set. And I'm not saying be like the Pittsburgh Pirates and throw and like Clint Hurdle and throw at everybody. That's cheap. Yeah. But this guy is begging for it. And if it happens to happen tonight or tomorrow afternoon, A, he deserves it. B, good on the Jays for doing it. Because this kind of stuff has to end. How dare this guy strike? He's down 17-4, and they're all over Batista for a bat flip 4 years ago? Are you because they're saying Batista's selfish. Selfish. This guy's got the worst on base in base. Guy, throw. I dug for a stat. I'm not the stat guy. Throw the stat I found, guys. This tells you everything you need to know. Rougned Net Odor hitting home runs to make it 70. That's his average. All right? I spent 3 hours looking for this stat. I found it. And you know what? His projected average, end of the year, boom, same. 2 away. That's the dude strutting at 17-4 with 18 buttons down his shirt like he's headed to Studio 54.
Okay, Sid is literally on fire.
I will give any Toronto Blue Jay pitcher $50 in big league chew.
Wow.
If they put one on his ass tonight or tomorrow. Because that guy needs to wear it. I don't care if I get in trouble for it. And you want to set a tone? Not only beat him on the scoreboard, 19-4, let him know that's unacceptable. Because the Toronto Blue Jays are changing things up off the field and on the field. And Shapiro and Atkins know what they're doing. And I believe in Charlie Montoyo. And I believe in Bobichet. And I believe in Kevin Biggio. I believe in Vladdy. And Danny Jansen's a better hitter than he's showing right now. I believe in Lourdes. This team is going to be good. And you need to have people stop and disrespecting this organization. He's disrespecting them at 17-4. Enough. Rudy Odor needs to wear it. I just don't like it, man. If you're the Toronto Blue Jays. You're a better organization than this organization in every single way. They have no future. None of their prospects are coming through. They mean anything. Everyone just swings for the fences in Texas. Lance Lynn's for real. I got nothing against Lance Lynn. And he might throw really well tonight. But the rest of the organization's a joke. Don't let some guy with 8 buttons down start strutting around like Conor McGregor. Get out of here.
Anything else you'd like to add, Sid?
You know, while you're saying that, I'm going to bring up Rougned Net Odor's stats just generally.
No, you're just going to read stats?
The worst thing I could possibly do to him is to read the numbers.
Okay.
His on-base percentage last year, I'm on baseballreference.com. Literally, it says, seriously? There's no number here.
No, it just says seriously?
It just says seriously. His batting average was less than my weight. I think it's 205. I don't know what I'm weighing now, but his batting average was 205 last year, Rougned Net Odor.
Think about that.
Like 205.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Less than your weight.
Anyway.
It could have been 305.
Boy, I showed him, eh, McAuliffe? I showed Rougned Net Odor. That does it for this edition of The Best of Tim and Sid. Thanks for listening. We will be back tomorrow for our final show of 2019. Take care, everyone. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan.